You're listening to Radio Influence.
He got him
in the white trunks.
He heard him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the tap.
Wow.
And here's Lucas Amitcher. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the May 16th edition of the MMA Report podcast. And coming up on this week's episode, we're going to take a look back at what happened last weekend down in Brazil and in California with UFC 224 and Bellator 199. Of course, we're going to talk about the controversy with Raquel Pennington, Mackenzie Dern missing weight over at UFC. When it comes to Bellator, we'll talk about, who saw Ryan Bader win in 15 seconds? We all know Daniel Galvan has been very public about picking Ryan Bader to win, but I'm pretty sure he did not even think he'd win in 15 seconds. Also, do want to talk a little bit about 50 Cent. Coming up in terms of the interviews on this week's podcast, going to bring in Angelo Reyes, a boxing and MMA coach, to talk about what we saw with Raquel Pennington. Also, I'm going to talk to Darren Cruikshank, who is coming off a win in Ryzen. And we're going to talk to a young fighter that's about to have his second professional fight, Blake Builder. Plus, we'll get you ready for this weekend's UFC Fight Night 129. Plus, go talk about a couple of MMA news items. Yair Rodriguez amazingly being released by the UFC. Chuck Liddell announcing that, yes, he is coming out of retirement. And also, we got to talk about this USADA testing shirt that is out there. But, Daniel, man, how the hell are you doing, man?
You know what, Jason? You list everything you just said, and holy moly, has this been MMA may not be at its peak of popularity, but it is at its peak of insane weirdness, man. I mean, not too long ago, we were talking about shows on Cam Soda, and you just laid out we had UFC Bellator same night, two cards that were actually super fun to watch, really enjoyable, and mired in controversy, especially the UFC. We're talking Chuck Liddell coming back. And 50 Cent being a fighter? I can't even understand. Every single week we do this podcast, Jason, and we just consistently have the most outrageous topics that this sport brings us. No sport, I believe, has such a wide range of absurd stories, and I think that's kind of why we love it.
Like, I don't even know what the most craziest story is of this week. I mean,
50 Cent is absolutely takes the cake. 50 Cent, are you kidding
me? I'm going to tell you, this is my, and we'll get into this a little bit later. I think that is nothing more than a marketing deal where, and I've heard this in the past, where Bellator pays people to tweet and Instagram about the Bellator product to get people to watch in. I mean, look, I remember seeing a football player tweet about Bellator one time. And I was like, I've never seen him ever tweet about MMA. And I went through his timeline. Yeah, there was never any MMA tweet. So it was kind of a clear sign that it was a paid deal, which, look, I think is a very smart marketing plan by Bellator. I mean, look, I mean, the Chuck Liddell thing, the fact of he thinks he can have two fights and then fight John Jones. Like, I don't even know what world we're living in.
Yeah, because literal prime Chuck Liddell would be like the worst fighter John Jones has fought in like 7 years, you know. And Chuck Liddell is a legend in the sport, but like the game evolved so quickly, and John Jones at the highest level just showcased such a diversity when you look at his skill set compared to what brought him championships. It's like if you look at Chuck Liddell on his best day, he would be a massive underdog against John Jones. And you're talking about a guy who got absolutely demolished to end his career, forced to retire because of how embarrassing his losses were. That happened like in 2010, and he's 48, saying he's two fights away from a shot at John Jones. I mean, he must know something that we don't, because I just can't even that one is one in which, okay, maybe 50 Cent is a brand, it's some BS brand deal, etc. I still hope we see him fight. I want to see him fight CM Punk or something. But Chuck Liddell is something that's probably going to actually happen. And I guess the only thing that can stop him is a commission. But I just, to me, when you look at him, it's like, this dude is really old, and it's really uncomfortable for a 48-year-old with his track record competing against like high-level MMA fighters. So that one is kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, look, I mean, Chuck's going to fight. I mean, you know, it's to me, it's been pretty evident that Bellator is not interested in getting in the Chuck Liddell business. And I think that should tell you something. But I also think that should tell you something about where Bellator is. And the fact of, you know, I know a lot of people like to just assume that, you know, oh, it's an older fighter, Bellator is going to sign up. But my kind of response is, when is the last old fighter Bellator signed that was not a guy that the UFC would want?
The last fighter that the UFC would not want?
Yeah, I mean, are we going back 2 years?
Well, Mirko Krokop, no.
I mean, I think that – but you know what? They only got out of that business because of the USADA deal. If there was not a USADA situation, I think there's no question Mirko Krokop is still in the UFC.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And then, like, some of these other guys who are kind of old, it's like they literally are just coming off being UFC fighters, like Roy Nelson. I mean, obviously, when you talk about the last 2 years, it has been a while. Maybe there's somebody I'm missing. But, yeah, the last egregious deal was obviously the Hoist Gracie deal. I mean, that was a while ago. And maybe they're out of that business. And maybe having guys like Yair Rodriguez fall right into your lap helps you get out of that business. Although, what about Fedor? Does Fedor count? Does Frank Mir count?
Well, I mean, Frank Mir asked for his release from the UFC. I mean, look, another situation. If he didn't have the USADA situation, I think he's still in the UFC. You know, Fedor, look, you think the UFC wouldn't love to be – they can say whatever they want in a public forum. But there's no question I think they would love to be in the Fedor business. But they just can't get a deal done or have – you know, in the past weren't able to get a deal done. I mean, I just think that you look at, and people mention about Vitor Belfort. And look, and I know I am in the minority. I don't think Bellator will get in the Vitor Belfort business. I think if Vitor ever fights again, then I think it's in Ryzen.
That's a tough one because I think that's the odds-on favorite. But if I'm Bellator, I would be kind of interested in like Vitor Belfort.
But what does he bring to the table?
I think he might bring 800,000 viewers on TV. For one fight, I think so. I feel like Vitor has a bit of name value, and you could throw him to the wolves. That would be kind of tempting to put him out there, maybe to build up Gegard Mousasi. I would, but the thing is, he did look really, really bad, and obviously the knockout became a meme. And he has so many knockouts that are memes, both for him and against him. He basically has identical knockout losses now with the Lyoto and the Anderson Silva. But even in like the pre-fight videos, like the UFC embedded I was watching, it was really sad to see him just go through all the motions because he looked almost frail. You know, he looked almost like that is the sad part, and that's maybe why I wouldn't do it if I was Bellator. It just felt like when you put into context that like he first competed at UFC 12, it really put things into context that maybe he shouldn't be fighting again. So I think Ryzen is the odds-on favorite, Jason. But I actually wouldn't be shocked if Bellator throws him a bone.
I don't see it happen. I mean, and here's the crazy thing about that knockout. Lyoto Machida's now ended two guys' careers on a front kick, Vitor Belfort and Randy Couture.
Mm-hmm. And I loved his call out afterwards towards Michael Bisping. That's such a smart call out for Lyoto. Not that it will happen. I don't know if Michael will ever fight again. But for Machida, that's such a smart thing to become the guy who just retires every single fighter in the UFC. That is such a smart place to be because you're always going to be in a featured fight.
Yeah, I was thinking about that once that fight ended. And you know, I'm sitting on my couch going, okay, who should Lyoto fight? And right when he called out Bisping, I'm like, oh man, that is like, that's a perfect fight for the UFC because that's a fight night main event. You don't necessarily have to put it on pay-per-view. When you look at, you know, the 80 billion fight shows a year they want to put on, they need main events, and Machida and Bisping fight makes so much sense.
Yeah, it really does. And it's one in which, if you're the UFC, maybe there's a little part of you that wants Michael Bisping to kind of go out on a good note. And you, if you want to do one last Michael Bisping fight, you want it to be a big fight. So big fights tend to be a problem for the retiring fighter because big fights mean they're taking on really, really awesome top of the line middleweights or whatever. And, you know, a Michael Bisping fight against a premier UFC middleweight would probably end really badly for Michael Bisping. And even though Lyoto has exhibited some high level knockout ability, I think it's still a winnable fight for Michael Bisping. It's going to be a tough fight, but it's a nice mix where I think he certainly has a chance to get his hand raised, and it's a fight people are going to care about. I mean, these are two names that have been a part of so many different UFC main events, headline fights, and I think it's a perfect end to Michael Bisping's career, and I kind of hope this one happens. But again, it's so – we know what all the storylines are, and it's kind of crazy how we just constantly repeat ourselves when it comes to the problems this sport has rearing its ugly head, right? Because what are the three negatives of this weekend, the underlying negatives? It's old fighters continuing to fight, and it's kind of sad to see them get knocked out. The weight system being messed up with Mackenzie Dern weighing in a whole weight class over. And obviously, corners not making a call that benefits their fighter's health. It's like all three problems kind of came into fruition. And if you want to do number four, the fourth problem we always have is lay and pray. And that was evident in the welterweight co-main event. I mean, Paul Daly talking to the cameraman in Bellator, that was nuts.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to like the Raquel Pennington situation with the coaches, I mean, anyone who's listened to us for any time knows that this is a subject we've talked about. I mean, I want to say we talked about this within the last 3 months of just this culture out there. You know, and you're going to hear my conversation with Angelo Reyes here in a couple of moments. This is kind of my thought. I mean, and we've now had a couple of days to digest everything. Raquel Pennington and her coach were both on Ariel Helwani's show on Monday, got to hear what they say. The fighter always is going to want to fight. One of the things that I learned on Tuesday morning, one of my questions was about, is the inspector. Now, for those who are not aware, you know, that commission representative that stands next to a fighter in the cage, you know, in terms of in between rounds, before the fight starts, that's an inspector. And my question was, if that inspector would have heard Raquel say what she did, how are they supposed to respond? And I talked to Mike Mazzulli about this, and Mike told me, he says, hey, that inspector then, of course, for those who are not aware, Mike Mazzulli, the president of the Association of Boxing Commission and Combative Sports, also runs the Mohegan Commission. And he said that inspector is then to go to the referee and tell the referee what they just heard. And I mean, look, at any point, you would imagine the referee at that point would probably go up to, you would think, either stops the fight immediately or goes up to the fighter and says, do you want to continue? I think one of the issues that you have with this is, after she says this comment, they're trying to motivate her to fight, which is understandable. I see why they would do that. And yes, there is such a limited time in between rounds where a coach realistically may only have 40 to 45 seconds to really give their fighter, some knowledge for the next round. But the thing you don't hear is there was no technical advice. And I know our coach on Monday, said that's one thing he does regret. That's the thing, is she was clearly down 4 rounds to nothing. I think the question would be, and I have not, I didn't buy the pay-per-view on UFC.tv, and I haven't seen anybody post this online, but I would be very interested to hear what the corner audio was like after the first, second, and third rounds.
It was just to put things in perspective. We saw UFC 223, Joe Lozon's corner stop the fight. That was something we really praised, and I think we need to come down hard when it comes to this discussion, because while I can understand why Raquel's corner didn't stop the fight, there is the heat of the moment. We have grown up on Rocky movies. We romanticize the I've lost 4 straight rounds, I'm going to win the fifth one. the comeback story. We saw a hell of a comeback earlier on the card from Jack Hermanson, who was injured, to get that finish over Talos Latis. But I think we got to come down hard on this, because if a fighter quits and says, I'm done, that fight has to be over. If a fighter who is like, this is the peak of her life, like this specific fight, it's her against the champion, the best, maybe the best female fighter of all time. And she says, I'm done. She's out mentally. She is completely out mentally. And there's, I would assume there's no way to get her back in that fight. And at some point that just becomes dangerous to throw her out in the fifth round. So you got to pay respect to the athlete. You know, this isn't like a 7-year-old playing soccer where you got to teach that person conviction and just keep on moving forward. This is a high level athlete, professional athlete. And when she says she's done, she's done. And it's never been this clear when it comes to criticizing corners for not stopping fights. Sometimes it's like, well, the fighter wants to continue. They're really beat up and they're going out there. Raquel Pennington literally said she was done. So I don't want to do this whole both sides deal. It's, to me, a very simple thing where their corner screwed up, and Raquel and her corner, they got to defend each other because they're family, and they're going to go back, and they're going to go back to the drawing board, get back and compete. And that's understandable. But looking at the specific example, I think we kind of got to make it clear that this was unacceptable.
I think one of the questions that I would have to her corner is what, you know, and I guess it would be more of a general question, you know, it would be related to this, but more of a general question of, well, what would it take for you to stop the fight? And I mean, look, I don't think you're ever going to see a fighter, quote unquote, quit for the most part. You know, I mean, there may be times where they just say, I can't do it. But, you know, it's one of these things where I just look at it. And I just say, you know, what would it have taken for them to, you know, stop the fight? You know, because I think there is something about, you know, live to fight another day. And you mentioned a great point about what we saw at UFC 223 with Joe Zonin. And I remember how much the entire MMA community credited her, you know, and just it's one of these situations that it's, and because it's got a lot of mainstream press. You know, it was on Deadspin. It was on the Big League. I'm at the gym on Monday, and they're the new ESPN show. I think it's called Get Up. They're talking about this situation, and I saw a great tweet earlier this week where it was basically along the lines of, what is Amanda Nunes thinking about, you know, the fact of her opponent is getting all of the interviews and she's getting nothing, and she went out there and had a dominating performance.
Yeah, that kind of sucks, doesn't it, if you're Amanda Nunes, because all she does is go out there and be a dominant champion. From the get-go, her leg kicks were like so damn vicious, and they really set the tone for the entire fight. So if you're Amanda Nunes, you kind of got to be scratching your head. But my answer to her for why she's not getting the coverage is just that we do live in a culture that really feeds off of controversy. So anytime you have a controversy, it's so easy to make that the news cycle. It's one of those deals where the Amanda Nunes discussion point isn't very interesting, because it's pretty simple. She goes out there, she thrashes everybody. And for Amanda Nunes, it's like, this was just a really A-plus performance, a really dominant performance. You know, rounds 2 and 3, Raquel had some moments, especially round 2, you know, got her down for half a sec. But for Amanda Nunes, to me, moving forward, it's all about who's going to be the other person in the cage with Amanda. I think Amanda can be a draw if she has an opponent that is right. I think Amanda without the right opponent is just going to do 100,000, 200,000 buys at the high. But Amanda, I think so many people know who she is that if you do put her in the cage with Chris Cyborg, you are talking about a massive pay-per-view. But unfortunately, she has done such a good job as in the women's bantamweight division, that when you look down this division, there really isn't a challenger that makes you interested. So it's kind of unfortunate for Amanda that she has done such a good job of beating down her opponents that the coverage is centered around how badly she beat down Raquel Pennington.
Yeah, I mean, there's not, you know, I don't know what more the UFC can do. I think there's a couple things they could maybe try to do. You know, maybe Ari Emanuel uses some of his connections in Hollywood to get her on some bigger shows, but she's been in big opportunities before. You look, she's been on huge pay-per-views in the past, and she hasn't become a star. But to me, the Chris Cyborg fight is a fight that you have to make. I mean, it's the biggest women's fight that the UFC can make, and I do think that it's going to happen. But you know, one of the things I did want to do is I did want to get a coach's perspective on this, and particularly someone who not just is a MMA coach, but is also a boxing coach, and that's Angelo Reyes, a guy I've had on the show many times before. Had a conversation with him, a little bit of a lengthy conversation, about 25 minutes long, where we talk about the Raquel Pennington situation, kind of get his general thoughts on that as a coach. Also, we talked a little bit about the Mackenzie Dern situation. So here's my conversation with Angelo Reyes. Angelo, man, as always, I appreciate your time after what happened this weekend down in Rio de Janeiro. There was, to me, no other better person to turn to get a coach's perspective than you. Fact of MMA and boxing, you know both of these worlds. You know, and obviously on Saturday night, it became a huge story with, you know, Raquel after the fourth round, clearly down 4-0, 1 round left. And she says to her coaches, "I'm done." And, you know, and we all know that she went out there. For you, just in generally, not on this situation, but in general, as a coach, if you hear your fighter say that, whether we're talking MMA or boxing, what goes through your mindset? And how much of that mindset is based on what you've been doing in the room with that fighter for the last 8 weeks?
Yeah, no, I got to tell you, Jason, that's a really good question you're asking, because to me, a coach-fighter relationship has to be a very close one. So I don't know Raquel's personal relationship in terms of how long has she been working with Coots and what kind of like game plan or playbook they had, or maybe there's a different thing, but first off, if you're going into a championship fight, we're not talking, this isn't a regular fight, man. This was the championship fight. I would like to assume that Raquel Pennington and her camp and her coaches had a certain game plan. So my first question is, at what point did they start to realize, like, was it 5 minutes in after the first round that the game plan wasn't working and maybe there's a plan B that they need to talk about? Because right about that time, you know, that's when if you start to see your fighter getting seriously hurt and you know that your fighter doesn't have the ability going into, let's say, round three, round four, to win by knockout or come from behind victory with like a crazy submission. If you don't know that there's even that possibility, as a corner, you already start collectively talking about stopping the fight. But for Raquel to actually voice it, what concerns me is several things obviously concern me, because it's a bad look for our sport. But what concerns me on that in one level is, okay, so Raquel went in there and after 20 minutes of fighting, she felt in her head that she had no answers for anything that Amanda was giving her. So then she went ahead and decided, hey, man, I'm done. It's like saying, look, I've tried everything that I know as the fighter. So unless you want to give me something else here, I'm done. And I think at that point, I think it's an issue. And you brought this up, too, when we've talked off air, that Coots himself, when he gave his instruction, you only have 60 seconds, man. And in all honesty, you know, you and I both know it's really less than 60. It's like, I got 40 seconds to tell you what the adjustment needs to be. He gave zero adjustments. That one doesn't sit well with me, because if you already have your fighter, if my fighter told me, hey coach, I'm done. I want to be done. What? I mean, yes, I'll be like, okay, You know, I don't want to say that. I mean, like, I don't. But I think that it didn't need to get to that point. My point is, in boxing, for example, you know, if in round two, going into round three, you're sitting and you're talking to Raquel, and maybe they have an audio conversation. Again, man, I was busy watching Lomachenko versus Linares, and so I have to really study this to give a very detailed opinion. But from based on what I saw, I'd like to hear what the audio was from round one to two and from two to three, just to see if there was even like a collective game plan of what adjustments needed to get made. Because from what it looked like, she was just getting beat up every round, and it was bad. It was worse than the Celtics beating LeBron, man. I mean, like the Cavs, it was pretty bad. So I don't. You mean you watched it all the way through live? So you tell me. I mean, how did it look?
I mean, look, it was a beatdown from Amanda Nunes, and really it was the low kicks in the first round that ultimately changed. And, I mean, her leg starts to turn a bright red, you know, within the first 2 minutes of the fight. And look, and I love that you brought up the point of in between rounds, it's such a short period. You likely 40 seconds is what a coach really has, you know, and I can understand, you know, the coach talking up the fighter. But to me, it's like, you know, if you're down four rounds to nothing, the thought process has got to be, you know, what can we do to just have an amazing turnaround? And to me, if I was in that corner, the technical advice would have been, look, you got to try to get this fight to the ground, and you got to try to take her out in top position, move position, and don't make this striking matchup. But I mean, look, in MMA, you know, for whatever reason, culturally, we just don't throw, you know, we rarely see it. I mean, I think most notably in the UFC, you know, we haven't seen this in a championship fight, but, you know, you go back when, you know, Trevor Whitman, you know, when Nate Marquardt told him he was over, he stopped the fight. And I believe that was after the second round in his fight. It's just, we just don't see it very often. And unlike in boxing, you know, we see it pretty frequently in boxing. And, you know, I'm always looking, you know, for someone who's not a consumer of combat sports, they see that headline with Raquel Pennington on a Sunday morning. We both know they're looking at combat sports in a bad light.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's what I mean is that anything that's, I mean, like Mackenzie Dern being 7 pounds overweight, that looks bad on her sport, obviously, right? But you can't, like, as much as I definitely, when we're talking about this, it does look bad for our sport. The fact that here's Raquel Pennington and she looks beat up, man. It looks bad. She's bleeding on the mat while Amanda Nunes is pounding her. You know, if somebody who's not a consumer of combat sports is watching that as a highlight reel, they would be sitting there probably going, why are they even allowing this? Why is this even legal? This is horrible. Now, if you show that clip of Raquel Pennington basically saying, I don't want to fight anymore, and then the coach telling her, oh, no, I want you to get back out there and do it, that looks really bad, like, to the public eye. So I'm still trying to make sense of where was the commission in this? Where were the doctors in this? Like, did the doctors, like, not check? Like, you know, in boxing, like, a doctor comes in between a round, looks at a fighter, and then the referee will even come over and go, hey, look, man, if you don't give an answer, if you don't answer back pretty well here in the next round, I'm going to stop it myself. So, I just got to throw it out there because we're talking about the subject. But we've seen this before. A referee warning the corner, I'm about to stop the fight if you don't show me something else. Doctor is saying the same things. We've seen this in fights before. So I'm wondering, is Brazil just that bad of a commission, man, that they allow 7 pounds over and, oh, yeah, go ahead and let a girl beat up. Don't, you know, like don't stop it. And or any fighter. I don't mean to say it that way. You know what I mean? Like that, you know, any fighter, you shouldn't allow any fighter to get hurt that badly. So I'm just wondering, you know, the blame needs to be everywhere, not just one thing. You know.
Yeah, that's my point is what happens if that inspector, you know, hears it? What is that inspector supposed to go straight to the referee and tell them, hey, I just heard her say I'm done? You know, it's an interesting talking point. You know, because I always wonder in MMA, will we get to the point of where boxing is in terms of corner saving fighters? And look, and I'm not in Raquel Pennington's camp, so I don't know what those training sessions are like, you know, kind of what happens there. I'm not in Mackenzie Dern's camp to understand, you know, why she came in so heavy. You know, I think on the Mackenzie Dern thing, you know, the fact that she only had 30% of her show purse, you know, look, you
it should have been way more, man. Like way more, like a lot more in the new contract too. Like, hey, by the way, we just signed you to 4 more fights, you know, like, and here's a little bonus. Thanks for taking the fight. I still wonder though, this Jason, and again, and you know, I praise Bellator a lot. I love working with those guys, Rich and Mike Hogan and Scott Coker. And again, I call a spade because I've got to work with both organizations. In dealing with Bellator, they're very professional with even letting, like I can't see the Mackenzie Dern scenario that just happened with Amanda Bobby Cooper. I can't see, I in my head right now, currently. So I don't. So again, you can't judge me from the past because I, you know, I started working with Bellator within the last year. But in this era, with Scott Coker in charge and Rich being the vice president of operations and taking care of things, in my own personal dealings with Rich, in similar scenarios, man, he was very upfront. He was very forward. He did everything he can to not only play down the middle, but also be fair to both fighters and just have a good show. So I'm wondering, you're telling me that if she came up that heavy, where was any of the UFC or commission representatives to let Amanda Cooper know on Tuesday? Hey, by the way, she's probably not going to make weight. So do you want to redo the contract for 125? I mean, to me, it just looks blatant. And again, I don't know. So I'm just throwing it out there that it's a subject people should talk about. Is did Amanda Bobby Cooper just like not know until the last second? And if that's the case, then where was the people that's supposed to protect Amanda Bobby Cooper from that happening? Because I get what everybody's saying right now. They're like, you know, you're terrible, Mackenzie Dern, this. And all I got to be honest with you, man. I don't blame Mackenzie Dern as much as what a lot of people are doing. Because it's kind of like blaming a kid for cheating on a test. Well, if the principal is allowing it and the teachers are allowing it and the school district's allowing it, then why are you blaming the kid? I get that you would like the kid to have better moral values. But at the end of the day, if you're allowing him to cheat on a test, of course he's going to cheat on a test. You know, it's the rare ones that won't. Mackenzie Dern's not some champion. Like you know, so yeah, if Mackenzie Dern, even like Dominic Cruz, I heard him say it. He was like, oh, she fully knew that she has an advantage. Yeah, I know. So tell me any fighters that you would know that wouldn't take an advantage if they were afforded that advantage. So my question more is, how come she was afforded the advantage without Amanda Bobby Cooper knowing that she was being afforded the advantage? Like, on, like, now, if the answer to the question is already answered with, yeah, on Monday, they actually told Amanda Bobby Cooper that Mackenzie Dern was already, like, 130 pounds before she even got in her flight. Then it's like, okay, well, that's on Amanda Bobby Cooper. But if we find out that Amanda Bobby Cooper didn't even know until the night before the weigh-ins, bro, that's pretty negligible in terms of neglecting Amanda Bobby Cooper's side, you know?
Look, you will have, you know, fighters who will fight in the state of California. If that fight was in California, there's no way, Andy Foster would have regulated that a strawweight matchup. He would have said, look, this is going to be, you know, a flyweight, or we're going to come to some agreement, you know, on what weight this fight's going to be, you know, fought at. I mean, you know, and look, for Mackenzie Dern, you look at, you know, the changes, the fact of, you know, not being invited to return to MMA Lab. To me, that was a big red flag in terms of, you know, where she's at right now. If a guy like John Crouch is basically, you know, saying, you know what, you don't really need to come back here. You know, that's a red flag. You know, she's clearly needs to get, you know, if she wants to be 100, 15-pound fighter, which I do wonder, is making 115 ultimately a healthy move for her?
Or should she really... or maybe she should be at 125, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I mean, look, and you know this, and we really don't see it in boxing. It's just an MMA thing where it's not about fighting in the weight class you should be fighting at. It's about fighting in the weight class you can make in MMA.
Yeah, and, instead of fighting at the weight class you could be best at. See, that's a really good point you just made right there, Jason, because you're right. In boxing, we have tons of weight classes, right? So Gervonta Davis, remember, prior to his most recent win, he had this weight issue, and the management demanded that the other fighter gets paid way more money, like you talked about, and then he did get paid a lot more money. So Gervonta went in there in a fight where he had a 4-pound advantage or whatever. But at the end of the day, the other fighter accepted it. And yeah, sure, he lost, but he accepted it. He got paid a lot more money. Now, if that same stuff was afforded to Amanda Bobby Cooper, that's where I'm saying, okay, well, then now we can go ahead and look at it the other way. And also, let me just say this too, to be fair, because I don't know Mackenzie Dern. I don't know what her scenario is like. I don't know what it was like to train at MMA Lab. And Mackenzie Dern is now, 7-0? So she's a fairly young professional fighter. Not an amateur fighter. Somebody who's dealing with the professional ways things are supposed to be done in making money as an actual fighter. So having said all of that, like while everybody's sitting there going, oh, Mackenzie Dern this, dude, I'll honestly say right now, the next time I'm back in Vegas, if Mackenzie's there, And I'd love to just sit down and have coffee with her, because I do believe she needs help in striking. That's for sure.
Oh, no question.
And I wouldn't mind just even getting to know her enough to know what her personality is like. Because when I heard her say, well, I've been on the mat since I was 3, and, you know, I want to feel like I don't have to go into the mats. It's weird, but in a lot of ways, I understand what she was actually saying from her perspective. But I also understand why a lot of people are going to attack her, because she's being given an opportunity that most people are dying to have, you know, and she's being given this opportunity because of what she's been able to build with her family name and her being great at jiu-jitsu. At the end of the day, though, I mean, again, before we start slaying how terrible Mackenzie Dern is, if we don't know her as a person yet, or we don't know her at all, we can't really make those opinions, because you have to know somebody before you can call them an asshole. You know what I mean? So I don't know her, so I would give her the benefit of the doubt. What I will say is she came in 7 pounds overweight, and I agree with Dominic Cruz that she fully knowingly knew that she had an advantage, which goes to my point. So whose fault is that? Because they allowed Mackenzie to do it. Who in the organization or the commission allowed all of that to happen? Because that stuff wouldn't happen in Bellator based on my experience, because it didn't happen. They were very forward. They give you warnings. They let you know. They keep you up to date. They tell you I saw the embedded where it showed Amanda Bobby Cooper cutting weight. So you're telling me that somebody's videoing that, but nobody is videoing Mackenzie Dern trying to cut weight? So maybe that's a sign right there. Maybe the reason why they're not videoing Mackenzie Dern trying to cut weight is because she's not cutting. So does anyone want to tell Amanda Bobby Cooper? Or does anyone in her team maybe want to go find out why? You know, so I'm just wondering, how did it even get to the stage of, sure, I'll agree to fight you for 30% with a 7-pound advantage. How did that even happen? When you and I both know Bobby Cooper's a big girl too. They could have just made the fight at 125.
Here's another point of that. Why not as a part of agreeing to take that fight and at that 30%, why not force her to have to be on a certain weight on fight day?
Yes, and Bellator does that too, by the way. They even did that with Frank. They made him weigh like the night of the fight, because you can't go over a certain weight. Like that, they do give you a sheet that says, "Hey," because they did it with Anna. That you weighed this weight.
Well, that is when you have commissions who have adopted the California 10-point plan.
Okay.
which right. I can tell you,
unified ABC rules is what you're.
You're going to see more commissions that are going to be adopting that over the next 6 to 9 months. But like for instance, I know Honest Fight was at Mohegan, and I know Mohegan has adopted. It's a very parallel policy to what California has, but it does require the fight. You see it in boxing where you're watching a boxing fight. They'll put up the graphic. Hey, fighter weighed in at 147 yesterday,
and then earlier tonight they weighed in at
153 or whatever. Right. But, right. and that's one of the things of, and I guess it's me as a media person, like, I've never understood why would you not have that as a little bit of a little informational nugget on your broadcast of like, hey, Ryan Bader is weighing this on earlier tonight he weighed in, and to really show you how much weight. But I think probably the reason the UFC doesn't want to do that is then you start to probably see guys are putting on 20 and 25 pounds after they weigh in.
Yeah, no, but again, though, I mean, if for anyone who gives me the argument of, well, man, you got to let the fighters fight. Okay, that's fine. I get the argument. So don't you think it'd be nice to educate the fighter, too, on exactly what they're getting themselves into instead of, like, being shocked? So if, like, King Mo, he knew Bader's bigger. That's why, after the fight, he texted me and he was like, hey, man, I'm moving down to 185. And I said, hey, dude, you're a warrior, one loss doesn't define anybody. So awesome. You're going to be a killer at 185.
Oh, he's the future 185 pound champion Bellator, because that's with King Mo, that's been the talk for, man, years. Ever? and a lot of the reasons why you heard why the move had not happened before is because of, the previous health issues he's had, very well documented. But now, he led his fight. He talked about how good he was feeling. Actually noted how much marijuana has played into that.
My man's into it.
but let me end on this one because we got to get out of here. But I know I was watching the Lomachenko fight. Beautiful shot to the liver there to end it.
The combination was amazing. The setup was amazing.
How about what were you thinking when he actually got dropped?
Yeah, see, that's a great question, Jason. So, again, when you're watching like that, because I was texting Frank, I was like, dude, are you watching this? Are you watching this fight? Because right off the first round, it was like watching high-speed chess. You're just seeing them both apply their moves, right? You're seeing it. Now, what's cool about Lomachenko, and everybody knows, if you're really into it, when you watch a 12-round boxing fight, especially at high level, then you know that the first three rounds is sort of like, I'm going to see what you got, you're going to see what I got, let's not show each other everything yet, because there's going to be a second gear. And then there's going to be a third gear. Then there's going to be a fourth gear. And then so usually I look at when I watch the fights, I look at it in two halves. I wait to see what happens in the first six. I think you and I talked about the Joshua Klitschko fight kind of this way, too. You see the first six and then you see the next six, the second half of the fight. Right. And in the first half of the fight, I knew that they were going to have to feel each other out. Even Linares said, I'm going to have to see what he's going to come with. And I thought Lomachenko was kind of doing the Greg Maddux, where he was throwing enough pitches, but not really his best stuff yet, just to kind of see what Linares was going to do. And I think that the miscalculation that Linares actually made, again, hindsight being 20/20 now, but you and I both watched the same fight, so is Linares, in a way, showed his best cards. You could tell that at least by the second round and going into in the third round, he was really trying to time and land that right. And I actually thought that when he landed it, I think the reason why he did land it too, I know how amazing Linares is. When I was with Freddie, Linares was training with Freddie right after he had gotten knocked out by Brettus Prescott. And then when Linares went to Vegas, I got to see some of the stuff that Linares was doing in Vegas too. So I know how amazing of a fighter he is. He's one of the best offensive fighters out there. And at 135, man, he's a king. He's amazing. So when he showed that he was trying to land that right, I kind of, that straight right, the one that goes down the pipe, I felt like Lomachenko during that first half of the fight, it's like Lomachenko was saying to himself, I know it's there, and I know I could get hit with it, but I'm playing my distances well enough and my angles well enough that he's not going to hit me with it. And the one time Lomachenko hung the curveball, Linares took it deep. And that's how high level that fight was. I mean, like, literally you were seeing a pitching match where both guys are trying to throw a shutout. And the one time Lomachenko hung a curve, Linares took it deep. And that was a game changer. Now, here's the flip side to it. Because Linares was already giving all of his gears, you could tell, too, like, even his corner was feeling it. Like, man, you got to put this guy away. So I going into round seven, I had, so Linares scores a knockdown. Going into round seven, I have Linares winning the round. Then round eight, you got Lomachenko winning the round. Then round nine, you could tell that Linares was really going for broke at that point, because you could also see his body kind of systematically getting broken down. And he's such a blood and guts warrior. You know, like, you know, we talked about Raquel Pennington earlier. I mean, dude, if you rewatch the fight of Linares, you want to talk about a guy who was also taking a lot of punishment. That guy, Linares, was taking a lot of punishment. And going into that 10th, man, like, when the knockdown happened, I was like, oh, my gosh, he has a puncher's chance. But as it extended, like, after round nine, you started to get that feeling like Linares' only chance is if he lands a home run. Otherwise, Lomachenko is probably going to either finish this the distance or put him away. So even me, I started getting that feeling like Linares could be put away. But I was excited, man. It made me jump out of my seat, because I'm a fan of both. But it made me jump out of my seat and go, geez, if people could just understand how high level what they're seeing is right now, they would 100% be a fan of boxing, because they would be like, wow, this is crazy. But what were you thinking? Were you just like, oh shit, I didn't think that was going to happen? Or what were you thinking?
I think I pretty much jumped off my couch like, holy. I mean, you know, just because you didn't expect it in the knockout, man. I just, man, what a combination. And, you know, there's not a lot of fighters, and this goes MMA as well as boxing, that I will make a point to watch no matter what. But Lomachenko is just one of those guys. You know, you tell me he's fighting next Saturday night, I'm finding a way to watch that fight regardless. And just as a consumer of combat sports, someone who's loved combat sports for all my life, is we just need more of those fighters that get you pumped up to watch fights.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And again, I mean, kudos to ESPN for showing that to everybody for free. You know, like instead of people having to pay for an amazing fight like that. I mean, dude, that was Pacquiao Morales 1 in a lot of different ways. And you remember Pacquiao Morales 1, I believe, was pay-per-view.
I mean,
and if it wasn't, it was like HBO, you know, like, so.
Well, and honestly, one of the things after our fight was over, one of my thoughts was, can they make Lomachenko a pay-per-view star?
I don't think they're trying to. I think Lomachenko is just going to be a star. But I think the ways of pay-per-view is gone for boxing now, don't you? Because when was the last time we really saw a pay-per-view?
Let's be honest, but at this point, in terms of boxing, pay-per-view is really boxing pay-per-view, HBO and Showtime?
Right. But they haven't really done it anymore, right?
Look, as a consumer, I absolutely love it. The fact of I can watch a fight on ESPN or... you know, if there's a fight on Showtime, you know, I can get a, you know, Showtime subscription and watch it. I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think of HBO having a big boxing fight coming up. Maybe I'm, you know, nothing's just really come to my head. I mean, I'm sure you would probably know better, but, you know, I mean, Showtime boxing, I heard the number beginning of the year that, God, do I want to say they're planning on doing 25 events this year?
Wow. That's a lot. Well, if it includes Showbox, though, if it includes Showbox, then that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it included. Yeah, included
on a Friday too. So.
Yeah, it includes Showbox. But I mean, look, it's you know, you tell me Anthony Joshua's fighting, gonna find a way to watch it.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, you and I discussed this off air, but that Eddie Hearn deal, man, watch for it. The Eddie Hearn deal changes the game, brother. You're about to see a lot of free boxing for a lot of people.
And of course, Angelo, man, we always love having you on the show. It's always great to get your unique insight into the fight game. Of course, everyone can follow Angelo on Twitter at Reyes Striking. Always bring the positivity Angelo's way. He likes the positivity. And Angelo, appreciate your time, man.
Hey, thank you, Jason. Thank you very much.
Daniel, there was my conversation with Angelo Reyes. Very interesting to get a coach's point of view on everything. So, you know, do you want to kind of turn the table, you know, and talk about the rest of UFC 224, some of the notable things to talk about on this fight card. Of course, you know, the Mackenzie Dern situation, you mentioned earlier with the weight. Of course, me and Angelo just kind of talking about it. I did find it interesting about Dominic Cruz, really. You know, I want to say it was on the weigh-in show where he just basically talked about, you know, hey, you know, it's when you're a grappler, having that weight advantage is going to be a very big deal. Of course, it was an overhand right that ultimately led to the finish of that fight. I mean, I think one of the questions that really comes in the question is when you have a fighter who came in, you know, as big as she did on Tuesday in Brazil, it's kind of like, why did they try to go ahead with that at 115 pounds? Why not just go to Amanda Cooper on Tuesday or Wednesday and say, Amanda, you know, she's not going to make 115. What's your thoughts about making this a 125-pound fight?
Well, that would have been fair to Amanda Cooper, but this was everything about this was very unfair for Amanda Cooper from the moment this fight was made. I mean, whoever was making this fight, maybe it wasn't Mick Maynard, probably, I'm not sure, but they were just looking at which female fighter has the most submission losses. Okay, there's Mackenzie Dern's next opponent. So it was unfair from that point forward. This was a fair sport. This fight never would have happened because Mackenzie Dern fought as a flyweight against a strawweight. And by the way, as we get lower and lower into the weight classes, that 10 pounds really adds up. I mean, you talk 115. I'm not too good at math, Jason. I think 10 over 115, that's like 8% of a person's body weight or something like that. I may have been wrong in the calculation. That was a mental calculation. So, like, that's really significant. And when you actually watch this fight, it's not like Mackenzie Dern came out here and was, you know, Ernesto Hoost or Peter Arts. You know, she wasn't technically a phenomenal striker. She just walloped Amanda Cooper with a hard punch. And how much of that was due to the weight advantage she had against Amanda? That's a big thing to keep in mind as we look back. And I saw Megan Anderson maybe say fights like this should just be ruled no contest, which, like, you know, if I'm a fighter, I would never take a fight that is eventually going to be a no contest. But this was very unfair. This was an easy win for Mackenzie Dern. She looked great, but this is definitely a performance that was mired in the fact that she weighed in at 123 for a fight where you're supposed to weigh in at most 116. And that's a bit of a shame. Her next fight should be at flyweight. I don't care if she goes to the UFC complex or whatever. When you miss weight that badly, you got to fight a weight class higher. Just talk to John Lineker about it because he's doing fine at bantamweight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think one of the things going forward with Mackenzie Dern is my question is making 115 pounds a healthy option? Now, you know, maybe, you know, she needs to get around, you know, the right nutritionist, stick to a diet. Maybe as simple as that is will make it. But when you see what she talked about, what she came to Brazil at, makes you kind of say, you know, should she be fighting 115? And the only people that know the answer to that question is Mackenzie and the people that are in her inner circle that are around her on a daily basis and can truly know whether making 115 is a safe option for her, you know. And, you know, that to me has got to be the question with her going forward. You know, probably look, it was a mistake for her to get back in here this quickly, you know, 2 months between fights. You know, give her a little time because, you know, she does need to get around the right striking coach. I mean, her jiu-jitsu is unbelievable, but, you know, can she get that striking down there? But I mean, look, she gets a win. You know, I will say this. Amanda Cooper's got to get more than 30% when your opponent misses weight by that much.
Yeah, it's not fair at all for her. 30% is a lot, but not enough. And also keep in mind, like, Mackenzie Dern, just to be positive, you mentioned it, man. She is an absolute dynamo on the ground. I mean, just a jiu-jitsu ace. Really, really great on the ground. So this is a fighter with the whole world of potential. And moving forward, Jason, it may not be in her best service to spend so much of her time focused on, like, getting down to 115, because at the end of the day, we're all humans. We only have 24 hours to work with, and every hour that maybe Mackenzie spends on trying to get down to fight and make weight healthy at strawweight is an hour she could spend working on takedowns or watching tape on how to wrestle or how to strike. And I think maybe for Mackenzie, when you look at where she is at her in her career right now, I would advise her to just spend all of her time focusing on the skill set of MMA rather than being a healthy cut at 115, just because she is a really special talent. And I think if she puts her focus on just that, she could end up really being a major star for the UFC and really successful, because there is things about her when you watch her fight that make you think, damn, Mackenzie's really special.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, be interesting to kind of see how the UFC can develop her. Now, this was a night full of stoppages, only two decisions on this fight card. Of course, one of those decisions was in the co-main event, Kelvin Gastelum, split decision win over Jacare Souza. You know, first off, how about, you know, Kelvin surviving that opening round where Jacare got to the ground where he wanted to be, you know, and obviously there was so much talk about this after the fight. To me, this is not a robbery. You know, it's just a close fight. And whether you scored the fight for Kelvin or whether you scored the fight for Jacare, I'm not going to argue with you. I personally gave a slight lean to Kelvin Gastelum. I think Kelvin Gastelum should get the winner of Robert Whittaker, Yoel Romero. I know Chris Weidman fans will sit there and say that Chris should be next. Because, you know, Chris's last win was against Kelvin, but that was, you know, 10 months ago. And, you know, Chris has been recovering from injury, just had another thumb surgery. Who knows when he'll be back? You know, and I'll kind of get your thoughts, who you thought won the fight. And are you in agreement with me that Kelvin should be next for a title fight?
I don't know, man. I think I would go with Chris Weidman. I get what you just laid out. And honestly, I think Kelvin and Chris both could get title shots off this. I think if Kelvin Gastelum came out here and won a dominant decision or got a finish, I would be in the Gastelum camp. But because this was a very close fight and a great fight, by the way, just a phenomenal, phenomenal co-main event, it told a great story. But the reason why I would tell you Chris Weidman, Jason, is just because if I'm the UFC, Chris Weidman to me is still a bigger name than Kelvin Gastelum. And that, to me, is why I would give him the shot, because I think they're nearly identical. But Kelvin Gastelum has done enough in his last two fights to warrant a title shot. Just to put things into perspective, and I did score this fight for Kelvin Gastelum 29-28. I was looking at MMADecisions.com, and this is crazy. I could have counted this wrong, but when you look at the media scores, you have three people that scored a draw 28-28. And you have 10 that scored it for Gastelum 29-28, and you had 10 that scored it for Jacare. That's insane. It was literally a draw if you look at the MMA media decisions. But I did have this score for Kelvin Gastelum. And, you know, Jacare kind of really looked a bit slow late on in this fight. Great, great initial frame from him. A phenomenal fight. You could absolutely make a case for Kelvin. When you look at what have you done lately, he's the one that deserves it. But to answer your question, Jason, the guy I would go with next is Chris Weidman, just because I believe he is a bigger of a name than Kelvin.
The case against Chris Weidman, 1-3 in his last four fights.
That's a pretty good case against Chris Weidman. I mean, it's kind of cool because for him, 1-3 in his last four, it almost seemed like it wasn't too long ago that he was losing kind of grip of being an elite fighter, right? It's almost aged overnight, losing that title. But for as much success Kelvin has, that kind of elevates Chris Weidman's case.
And if Romero ends up winning the title, do you really – is that the fight you want to go to? After what we saw happen in their first fight, and Whitaker and Romero has to play. I mean, what happens if that's like such an incredible fight, very close, and maybe, you know, the UFC feels judges didn't get it, you know, wrong? They could go straight to the trilogy matchup between those two guys.
Yeah, that is true, and we could have a rematch between Kelvin and Chris Weidman to have a clear-cut number one contender. There's so many things up in the air, but it's safe to say that with this performance, Kelvin has put himself in a position to get a title shot, and the thing in the UFC is just being there in that position, you may get your title shot sooner rather than later. You never know when a guy's going to get hurt, and with this victory, Kelvin is absolutely worth the title shot, and for Jacare, it's just it was a good fight to be a part of. It's just that as he gets older, every setback is more and more pronounced, just because Father Time is always right hovering over his shoulder.
Before we get into Bellator 199, you know, the things that the other thing that stuck out to me on this card has got to be Alessio Lenik, another Ezekiel choke submission. You know, Fabricio Werdum looks like that could be a potential route they go there. Werdum basically saying, you're not going to catch me in that. You know, you look obviously John Lineker, the knockout win there. You know, Dos Santos with a knockout or Sean Strickland. Those are the matchups that really stick out to me.
Yeah, I think those are three awesome matches to highlight. And there was a lot of great stuff. Again, this was a phenomenal top to bottom pay per view. A lot of these things are going to get lost. Love how great John Lineker has looked. I mean, just an all around performance for him. Really great. From round one to getting that late finish. The Ezekiel choke, getting that without the gi, I don't even understand how that's possible, how that works, but Olenek completely gets it. Spinning wheel kick, dope from Dos Santos against a very tough fighter in Sean Strickland. And Jack Hermanson's win over Leites was pretty good. Looked like he really banged up his leg early on in that fight for him to ultimately get that win. Solid performance from Mutante Ferreira against Carl Roberson. And Davi Ramos is a guy to watch at lightweight. This is just a fighter, pure and simple. Phenomenal jiu-jitsu game. He showcased that against Nick Hine, and he called out Nurmagomedov. I'm pretty sure that's what they're going to do next. Davi Ramos, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Jason.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's definitely not a route they're going to go, but that is UFC 224. Of course, we'll get into this Saturday's UFC Fight Night card later on in the show. But let's move over to Bellator 199. You know, no one saw the main event going the way it did. Knockout win. I watched the post-fight show on the Bellator app, and Ryan Bader talked about how they really noticed some tendencies in terms of, you know, when King Mo would put his head down. You know, just, man, didn't see that coming. You know, King Mo, after the fact, saying that he's going to go down to 185 pounds, you know, and Matt Mitrione. And I'll tell you, Josh Thompson's a very good color commentator. I really like listening to him talk. And he said something, I'm not sure if it was on Paramount or whether it was on the post-fight show on the Bellator app, where he basically said that, you know, there's nothing really Matt's going to be able to do for however long he has to prepare for this fight against Ryan Bader to tone up his wrestling to where it's going to be anywhere near get him ready for this fight.
Yeah, he's got to hope for a 15-second knockout of his own, I think, against Bader. And I think the game plan, if you're Matt Mitrione, is go out there and, you know, throw some haymakers, because the thing you have is the power, and that's a big-time weapon for Meathead. So to go out there and do that, because there just is not enough time. I mean, it kind of takes a lifetime to be at that same level of Bader, and was a more credentialed wrestler, but he's kind of aged out of that. And this was a kind of a sad fight where, you know, it was a freak. It's a freak thing. I mean, you can't say too much about either guy. Getting down to 185 is probably where King Mo should go. It's just a weird transition from heavyweight to middleweight. But obviously, you look at his frame and he looks at like a guy at 185. And yeah, I think Matt Mitrione's definitely not my pick. I'm going with Ryan Bader to beat Matt Mitrione, but in heavyweight fights, anything can happen, as evident by this main event, because what we saw here maybe wasn't indicative of the skill set of both guys. Even if Ryan Bader maybe had more dangerous stand up, he just caught him right perfectly where he needed to with that left, and it's as if Ryan Bader didn't even have to fight to get to the semifinals.
And the thing about it is, as much of a highlight reel knockout it was for him, it's not even the biggest topic from this fight card. That's, you know, Paul Daly and booing his fight as John Fitch is on top of him. And look, we called it. We knew that if John Fitch was going to win, this is how it was going to be, a boring fight. And, you know, and one of the things that you heard is all, you know, Bellator's booking this to penalize Paul Daly for his comments. But at the end of the day, who'd you penalize? You penalized Paul Daly for putting him in a fight that, you know, wasn't stylistically great for him. But at the end of the day, you penalized your fans. You know, the people that you count on to tune in every time there's a Bellator event, it wasn't entertaining to watch. And you want to be in the John Fitch. This is a thing that just baffles me about Bellator. You want to be in the John Fitch business, but you don't want to be in the Ben Askren business. I would love to hear the true explanation for that. You understand where Paul Daly's coming from. I just look at it and say, you know, when television ratings average was under 500,000 viewers, and you can't help but wonder how many people maybe, you know, flipped over, after the Lomachenko fight, that maybe weren't ordering the UFC pay-per-view and turned that on and was like, I'm gonna go watch something else.
Yeah, John Fitch, and by the way, Jason, if you're looking for consistency in the MMA business, you're going to be looking for a very, 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 very long time, because you won't find it, and it makes no sense that, Ben Askren is not the apple of their eye, yet John Fitch is. You know, John Fitch looked in good shape. This was a dominant fight, but it played out exactly, I think, what we thought it was going to happen if Fitch was going to win the Wrestling Edge. As soon as this fight was announced, I think both of us were perplexed by the matchup. I will say, though, very entertaining close to the fight. I was enthralled by Paul Daly just talking smack. I liked Mauro Ranallo not like realizing this is actually going to compelling television. I'm just going to not talk for the rest of the round, because to be honest with you, Paul Daly just talking trash is really entertaining as someone who likes chaos to close out that third round. I mean, we can talk about how it's embarrassing for the brand or whatever, but just from a pure entertainment standpoint, that type of conflict, that type of uncomfortable thing, I find very entertaining. But Paul Daly is the McDonald's employee that showed up to work with a Whataburger or a Burger King cap on. He wanted to get fired. I mean, he was the high school senior that did the prank, because he does not – I mean, he had one foot out the door of not only Bellator, but maybe the entire sport of mixed martial arts. And it's kind of a shame, because this is a guy who could theoretically be very entertaining if used properly. He's obviously a major hothead who has had his fair share of controversy. But this was obviously the big time negative of the entire night. And it was a night full of plenty of positives.
Yeah, it was. You look at, you know, Aaron Pico, another highlight reel knockout for him this time, 1 minute and 10 seconds. Adam Piccolotti, what a performance he put on against Carrington Banks, gets the submission in the third round. And unfortunately for you, Javi Ayala didn't walk away. Chet Congo, a knockout victory, and clearly puts himself right there in line. But I mean, to me, it's when I think about this fight card, clearly you're going to think about Ryan Bader, but to me, the ones that stick out have got to be Aaron Pico and Adam Piccolotti.
Yeah, and the Piccolotti Banks fight, just a great opening bout on TV. Love that fight. Again, if I were each guy took a round, I thought, and then Piccolotti really turned things around. And you know, when he was taken down, it's clear how good this guy is on the ground. He showed that getting the rear naked choke. So great fight out of him. And he took away the O from Carrington Banks. I don't want to talk about the Javi Ayala fight. That was a bad stoppage. Javi obviously was going to return and get that comfort behind. Just a true travesty. And he clearly should be in the heavyweight tournament even with this loss. But to be serious, by God, Chet Congo in a fun fight. The only person that could get that out of him is Javi Ayala. So big win for Javi Ayala, but a bigger win for Chet Congo, who got his first stoppage in 2014, which that's longer than it seems. Sounds like And Bader, 15-second knockout, Paul Daly complaining. Those are the two bigger stories. But the biggest story, maybe not now today, but long-term, is Aaron Pico. This is a fighter that is super special. We all know it, and he fought like it, getting that body punch knockout over Lee Morrison in 70 seconds. Look, man, yeah, there's some things heading Bellator's way. Yair Rodriguez is a good signing, but Aaron Pico is the type of fighter where you see him fight and you're like, this guy could carry this brand to the next level.
I couldn't help. After he won, I was thinking, boy, if Aaron Pico were to hit free agency right now, he would be in such a prime position.
Yeah. Well, do you know what his contract is?
I have no idea, but I'm telling you, if I'm representing Aaron Pico, I'm going, Aaron, we're fighting this deal out, and we're going to see if the UFC will open up their pocketbooks for you. Because at his age you think of Aaron Pico, you think of wrestling. But you forget about his credentials in striking. I mean, to me, and look, if I'm Bellator, I'm just like, Aaron, what do you want? You got to try to make Aaron Pico as happy as possible, because God damn, that kid is so fun to watch fight.
Yeah, and it's not even that he's super talented, which he obviously is, but you mentioned it, fun. He's a very fun fighter to watch, and that is a beautiful combination. That, along with how young he is and the achievement he has already had in the world of amateur wrestling, it's like, if you're this guy has more potential. This guy has more star potential than anyone on the UFC roster that isn't already a star. And that's what makes him so valuable. He is he obviously may never get there, but he's the guy, if you're the UFC, he makes you sleep well at night thinking, we could be in the Aaron Pico business in 2 to 3 years, and that's going to be a very profitable business.
Yeah, it's, man, looking forward to seeing his next fight. Of course, the next Bellator event will be coming up May 25th, Friday night there in London. Of course, Bellator 200 is going to be a big night for Bellator. But coming up next is going to be the interview portion of this week's podcast. You're going to hear from Darren Cruikshank and Blake Builder. But before we get to that, Dale, we want to let everyone know that the MMA Report podcast this week is brought to you by the Good Cigar Company, your personal tobacco. Be ready to celebrate when that occasion hits. Maybe it's this weekend for UFC Fight Night 129. You're going out with the fellas and you want to have some cigars. You definitely want to check out the Good Cigar Company. They are perfect for watching fights, golf trips, weddings, bachelor parties, any reason to celebrate. And they've got great gifts for dads and grads.
You're right, man. If you messed up on Mother's Day, don't worry. Father's, like, if you messed up, got your mom a bad present, this is a great present for Father's Day in June. So look at that. I mean, look, man, cigars are all about being relaxing, all about camaraderie. And the cool thing about the Good Cigar Company is, like, Jason, I'm a millennial, and I always feel uncomfortable going into places and buying stuff. And buying cigars really is not something that I do, because I kind of feel intimidating. Just because I go inside a cigar shop and confusing, dated, I just feel lost. But Good Cigar Company just makes it simple. You just go to their website, you pick a strength level, and they will send you the top shelf cigars at a great price.
And of course, cigar smoking requires a ton of equipment. Who has a humidor? Anybody have a cutter? I know I've been in that situation. You're out somewhere, you're going to have a cigar. Who's got that cutter to get ready? They've got you covered. The Good Cigar Company makes all that easy. Each pack comes with two cigars and everything needed to light up the pack. Even acts as its own humidor, so the cigars stay fresh for months. Now, to take advantage of this special offer they have for you, you need to go to goodcigar.co and use the promo code MMA Report for 10% off any subscription. Once again, that is goodcigar.co, goodcigar.co, and use the promo code MMA Report for 10% off any subscription. And with that, we're going to get into the interview portion of the podcast. Up first, you're going to hear from Darren Cruikshank. Of course, he's coming off that win at Ryzen, so talk to him about that. Also, we did talk about the Raquel Pennington situation. And then you're going to hear my conversation with Blake Builder. He is a prospect fighting out of California. He's got his second pro fight coming up here on July the 6th, so I chatted with him about his career and everything else. So here's my interviews with Darren Cruikshank and Blake Builder. Darren, man, I appreciate the time. Congratulations on the victory. I know you've done our interviews talking about the fight, but in terms of the fight, where does this knockout rank in all of your knockout victories? In terms of most memorable, you know, when your days are done and you're thinking about memorable moments, where do you think this one's going to rank?
I mean, it's definitely up there. Anytime there's a walkout knockoff, but the thing is, I have a few, so I can't really judge. It just depends on what people will remember down the road when I'm done fighting. That's the real question. You know, see which one's the most memorable for them.
Of course, you fought in Ryzen now for a couple of times now. How is it different fighting in front of the Japanese fans as opposed to here in the United States?
As far as the fans, you know, they're pretty respectful. They actually, you know, they're great fans to have, I'd say, because they like show up at the hotel. They give you gifts. I had one guy. I wanted to go shopping. I didn't really know how to use the bus system and stuff. He literally took me on the bus, took me like a couple exits down, dropped me off in the shopping area. I was like, you know, it's crazy. As far as like during the night or at the show, they're real quiet. They literally watch everything and they study. Every once in a while, something crazy happens that you'll hear them like, ooh, and then boom, they go right back to being quiet and actually just kind of watching the show. So it's definitely different from anywhere I've ever fought before.
You know, and obviously, I mean, you know, essentially fighting in silence. So you hear everything that your corner is saying. Now, has there been a time where maybe your corner's trying to learn a little Japanese, maybe figure out if your opponent's speaking Japanese and kind of figure out what they're calling for?
Right. I mean, you can kind of tell. As far as whatever the language barrier, it's kind of like the international language of love. Like, you know, what's going on through like body, like what the guy's saying with his body, you know, you don't really need to know what his corner's saying. You see him want to take a shot on the takedown, or you want to, you know, as far as them keeping their hands up or whatever, you can just read it.
And I know you mentioned in another interview you're getting married here for the summer, so congratulations on that. It's towards the end of June. What happens if a fight comes to you your way a week or two before the fight? Do you have to go to the fiance first and see if you get her approval?
No, she likes money too. So she just said, "Yeah, no." Well, thank you on the congratulations. But yeah, if I got a short notice fight in my career, I've got a bunch of those. I like to fight too much. So obviously I wouldn't fight that week, but, I mean, the week after or the week before, 100%.
Do you prefer short notice fights? You know, some guys talk about it because the mental side of it, you're not, you know, thinking so much about it, but for you, is there advantages to a short notice fight?
You know, I always train. So like a lot of guys will take like a month off after they're fighting and or after their fight. I'm about to leave for boxing class right now. But like I am constantly preparing just in case. You always got to be ready. And I've had some of the best opportunities of my career being short notice fight. So, it really does pay to be in the gym. And I would say 2 weeks out, 3 weeks out of fight camp, kind of like where you could fight in 3 weeks is where you want to be.
Of course, it's, you know, for the UFC fans out there, it has been some time since we've seen you. But the thing that I was, when I was looking up and down your record, you know, as your career has gone on, to realize the guys that you fought against and where they're at right now in their career, do you ever kind of, you know, like look at a Paul Felder and kind of, in a way, root for him since you two have battled?
You know what? I was beating his ass. So I mean, if he's being successful, I mean, it's all power to him. You know, I've never really been a fan of anybody else but myself. So, you know, and but the thing is I also don't like the, I don't really like care or watch other people fighting. You know, I really just worry about myself and my guy's actually fighting. So, you know, it is what it is.
And of course, you know, there at Michigan Top Team, a lot of great fighters have come out of that gym. How do you become a better fighter when you're cornering somebody else?
I would say, actually, I learn a lot of things from some of my students. They don't even realize they're doing something, some kind of fake or feint or setup that they just naturally do. And I'm like, you know what? I just saw that. I know exactly what you did. That worked awesome. And now I'm going to apply it to myself.
And, you know, when it comes to some of those up and coming fighters at Michigan Top Team, who are some of the guys that we need to be paying attention to?
I mean, you know, we have Cody Stamann. I've been training with him for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now or something like that. But he is just now breaking in the UFC. He's 3-0. I want to say he broke the top 10. He's doing really great. As far as any like other guys under him is we have a ton of amateurs that are up and coming. We got a couple guys to watch out for. You know, we got a pretty big roster, and I've been planting the seeds and growing and adding water to this gym like constantly. And it's about to bloom. Like all of our flowers are going to grow up and beat the shit out of everybody. So I'm very excited for that.
Of course, you know, the big topic over the last couple of days, you know, has to do with what we saw happen in the UFC main event. And I thought you would be an ideal person to talk to this about is with what happened with Raquel Pennington, her coming back to her corner, the fact of, you know, you coach fighters, you're also a fighter. How would you have handled that situation from a corner aspect when a fighter verbally says, I'm done?
You know, it just depends on the fighter. You got to know the person. You know, some people are mentally weak. And it, you know, they can do it physically, but it just takes maybe you to tell them, no, you got to go back out there kind of thing to get them to turn back on, to open the lights back on, you know, as far as like, you know, you got to know your fighters. If somebody that I know that would basically die, for the crowd and to put on a show, says like, you know, I can't continue, then I would trust them and say they're, you know, but if they're mentally weak and they're like, you know, they just need that little bit of push. That's the best part about this game is the mental part. I coach and I motivate every single one of my guys slightly different depending on what they need. You know, one of my favorite, classes in college, I have a bachelor's degree from Olivet College was, sports psychology. I love it. So as far as, I think, what was it, Raquel, that couldn't make it? I mean, that really depends on the coach. And if the coaches actually know their fighter, you know, was she done when she said she was done? Did she, you know, or there's something that you could say to ignite that fire again, to get her to go back out there and keep going if she was possible, you know, if she could. So.
One of my criticisms I have of it, and look, I understand both sides of the scenario of it, is the fact of when she says that, you didn't really hear technical advice of how you turn this fight around in the fifth round. That to me is what sticks out to me is, hey, you know, obviously you're trying to talk her back up to get her back in the fight, but it's where's the technical advice of here's what you need to do to, you know, turn this thing around. To me, that's the part that really sticks out to me.
Well, like as far as what I've always thought was like, say you'd say a perfect coaching staff, right? You have say you have two coaches in the corner. You have one for technique, right? That's the person that can get across technique to the fighter that they can understand. They work with all the time. And then you have two, a person that knows how to motivate that fighter. Now, you know, later rounds when you're exhausted, it's not about technique. Right. It's not like the fight's going on. We're in the fourth round. It's about who wants it more. Right. And that's where that motivator comes in. Now, if you don't have a good motivator, they don't know how to push your buttons, then, you know, that's like a fail. But if you get somebody that, you know, a lot of times winning a fight is just to see who can hold on the longest. So you got to be able to motivate your guy. or girl and get them to go out there and be hungry and go after it.
Is that one of the hardest coaching traits to have, is to be that motivator, to know how to say the right things to get the best out of your fighter?
100% it is. I mean, you can go anywhere in the world and like get really good technique. I mean, there's only so many things you can do with your body and learn, you know, it's fighting and everybody knows how to do it. But knowing how to motivate a person past what they think they can do is huge.
Yeah, and you know, look, we'll see how it goes back. But final thing, Darren, I wanted to go back to 2009, October 10th, 2009, King of the Cage, your pro MMA debut. What do you remember about that night?
I remember having his back. Actually, I had his back on the ground. And in my head, I'm like, you know, this is my pro debut. I don't want to finish this by a rear naked choke. I literally locked him down and I told the ref to stand us up. Hey, stand us up, dude. So we stood up and then I knocked him out with a back fist.
Yeah, do you ever regret that?
No, no way. But the thing was, is that was my, so I'm on Sherdog, my like, you know, like my record or whatever was 1-0 undefeated. And it was 100% knockout rate. Right. And I'm like, man, I want to keep this 100% knockout rate on Sherdog. And then the next fight, I ended up choking somebody. So I was like, damn it. Oh man. Well, there goes that 100% knockout rate.
Yeah. That was against Brett Biederman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, have you ever think about like how you looked at the fight game back then as opposed to now?
Yeah, I really feel like I still look at it the same. You know, I've always been one to not. I mean, yes, you want to win fights. You want to win fights. You like, but you also want to put on a good show. So I've always looked at it like that. It's an entertaining. It's an entertainment sport. Just like professional wrestling. You know, you gotta know how to manipulate the crowd, and guys that are doing that are making a lot of money doing it. Even when they lose, they still get called back.
Yeah, I've always said this, as much as a sport, you got to entertain. You know, there's certain fighters that fans aren't going to go out of their way to watch. I mean, exactly. It's not trying to call anybody by name, but we both know there are fighters in sport that people just, they're going to pass on. But if you have that fun striking style, they're going to find a way to watch you fight.
Yeah,
100%. And of course, we'll look forward to seeing when your next fight takes place. But of course, as always, let everyone know where they can follow you on social media.
Awesome. Well, let me thank all my sponsors. Half Cock Targets. All my sponsors are gun companies, basically. Half Cock Targets, Phoenix Ammo, BG Defense, ATEI, Oakland Tactical, and Victos Brand. All those guys help me out as far as like. All in my shooting sports. I really like to promote them on my MMA scene because most people that like mixed martial arts or the UFC or anything also like guns. So it's a good give and take. But you can find me. I have a YouTube channel I'm trying to grow. It's Darren Cruikshank. My Instagram is Darren Cruikshank. Facebook's Instagram or Facebook's Darren Cruikshank. But my Twitter is Cruikshank155.
How you doing, Blake?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very good. I appreciate you taking some time out of your day to sit here and talk to me about your upcoming matchup. Of course, it was just a couple months ago. You made your pro debut. You know, as you have had time to assess that, how do you view that fight?
I mean, I view it as a perfect start and a display of what is to come. You know, I went into that fight, came out with a flawless victory. I didn't get hit once. You know, I demonstrated, you know, quick off the bat that, you know, I kicked him in the leg. I saw that right hand drop. I capitalized on the head kick. And then he wanted to grapple. And then I showed that, okay, if we're going to grapple, I'll take it to the ground. And I'll display some of the tricks that I got up my sleeve.
And of course, the victory comes in 85 seconds. You know, this was after a very successful amateur career. You know, looking at your topology, 2012 is when the first amateur fight, you know, took place. So what drew you to martial arts?
What drove me actually was a friend of mine was beating everybody up after school, and he'd always pick fights. And I always watched it when I was younger. I would imitate the boxers on the TV. I'd sneak into my mom's room and watch, WWF back when it was amazing. And back when it was real to me, I'd watch that and the Muay Thai fights and the boxers and the MMA guys. And I just thought, wow, like this is incredible. These guys were real life superheroes. And I got the opportunity to go to a boxing gym when I was 17. My buddy was beating everybody up in school, and he beat up my really good friend. And I fought him, and I took it to the ground and peppered him up a little bit. And I apologized. I was like, "Hey, man, you beat my friend up. I'm sorry, but damn, you got some crazy skills." He was like, "Hey, it's cool, no problem." My buddy ended up living next to him that summer. He moved into a house next to him, and we would box in the front yard. And one day he was just like, "Hey, man, are you done partying and all that stuff?" And it had been like 4 days since I been like stopping doing anything bad, and I was like, "Yo, that was in the past, man." And he's like, "All right, you ready to go to the boxing gym?" And ever since then, it was a complete obsession.
And as I mentioned, everything has gone extremely well for you. One of the things that gets brought up in the fight game, whether we're talking MMA, boxing, kickboxing, whatever it may be, is adversity. Outside looking in, we look at you as, hey, undefeated guy, undefeated amateur, all this. What is the biggest adversity you've had to deal with?
The biggest adversity, honestly, it's getting guys to sign the contract and show up. For me, it's so hard to find other professionals in the sport. And by professional, I mean me and you have a call planned at 2. You call me directly at 2. I'm ready to answer the call directly at 2, right? It's say what you mean. And if you say you're going to show up, be a man of your word, honor that and show up. I'd say my biggest adversity is just finding guys who are willing to sign the contract, willing to show up the day of, and willing to get in that cage and display what they're signed up to do.
Why do you think people just say they see your name, it gets approached to them, they're like, "Nah, I'm good"?
Well, it's funny. I asked my manager. I was like, what happened to the April 21st fight? And he's like, honestly, I don't know. I contacted their people, and they'll remain nameless, but they just plain and simple just said, we never agreed to fight him. And so we planned for April 21st. Well, we were shooting for May 4th. Hopefully, we didn't get any word about May 4th. We were excited for June 10th. We were hoping for June 10th, and now it's looking like July 6th.
And obviously, that's got to be just extremely frustrating for you. I mean, how do you not let that bring you down?
For me, it's always the end goal that's in my mind, Jason. So I know that anytime somebody's backing out, or anytime something like this is happening, it seemed to the main guy, to the normal guy, he would say, "Oh, I'm not getting paid to train. I get paid when I fight. It's not moving fast enough." And a lot of guys will slow down their approach. They will stop the training. They'll veer off, and they'll enjoy the time off. But I'm in the gym every day, training hard, looking to learn and improve on my ability to get in there, because I have the end goal in mind, which is, being the best in the world, being able to adapt to any style. So that's what pushes me, is just a bigger vision of the end goal.
They talk fight mentality, and for a lot of guys, they'll say, "Look, this is about me. It's not about my opponent. Yes, I'm going to walk into a fight. I'm going to know what he likes to do and what I think he's going to do to me. But at the end of the day, it's about me, not him. Is that simply your mentality as well?
It's, you know, I always have respect for my opponents because without them, I wouldn't be who I am today. You know, so there's always admiration and respect for my opponents. And for me, you know, in a sense, it's more of a battle against myself as is anything. You know, I mean, if people were confident and believed in their ability, they would sign the contract. They would show up to fight that day. You know, but time and time again, it shows that, you know, people get cold feet, people get injured, you know, and for me, my mindset is I want to be the very best. I want to fight the best. If this guy is extremely talented and he's got an undefeated record, I that's great because I want to fight great guys. You know, if I didn't believe that I was great and that I was capable, you know, I'd still be back in Minnesota.
You know, in terms of going out to California, I mean, that's, you know, you have to make, you know, decisions. What went in that for you of why you realize that's where you need to be?
For me, you know, it goes back to, finding fights and, you know, I mean, it's frustrating, of course, that I have to wait until July 6th to get a fight, but I mean, we were trying for about half a year. I mean, the decision to go pro was around the beginning of last year. And it was just nothing was happening. So I said, you know what, 2017, find me a pro match. But if you can't, I'm going to compete in the Golden Gloves and go that route and just kind of make a name for myself in the boxing world, because people kept labeling me, that's an MMA guy, that's an MMA guy, but I'm not a one-trick pony, and I can adapt to any style, and I have a good read and fight IQ, and I just wanted to let people know that, hey, you know, I'm not just an MMA fighter. I'm, you know, I'm Blake Builder, and I'm just an individual who can adapt and adopt to any style or any type of fight.
In terms of you, is there anyone in your immediate family that is ultimately shocked that you're a professional fighter?
I think everybody, you know, because, you know, growing up, like I said, you know, I was just misguided. You know, I didn't really have like a chief aim, mission, vision, purpose or goal or anybody to mentor me and show me the way. If you would. And, you know, I just was hanging around people who, also just didn't know what they wanted, didn't know the direction. And as soon as I found boxing and I got a coach, you know, I grew up without a father and having that, guy just showing me how to be a better person inside the gym, but also outside. Hey, okay, this is what we do here, da 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 da. But also on the outside, I need you to conduct yourself as a professional. So in the beginning, I was always, it was always drilled and instilled in me to carry myself as a professional, because there's people who are looking at me that I would never even realize are paying attention. You know, so.
Well, you know, final thing here, Blake, and I really appreciate time. What would you want the MMA fans to know about you? The ones that maybe this is the first time they're hearing you talk. What would you want them to know when they hear or see your name?
Yeah, you know, I just want people to know that, you know, when they hear my name or see my name, know that I'm going to put on an entertaining fight. Know that this has nothing to do with me, but everything to do with the greater good of people. I fight to bring out a mission, to show that hard work, dedication, and keeping a vision at the forefront of your mind, you could do anything. You know, I was broke, busted, and disgusted 3 years ago. You know, I was drinking every weekend, you know, doing drugs and just living that lifestyle. And as soon as I got around people who really cared about me and loved me and was looking for my best interest, I was able to turn everything around. And so my mission is just to show people that they can become more, that you can do anything that you put your mind to. And so when there's a great Muay Thai guy that I'm fighting or this guy or that guy, you know, for me, it doesn't matter. The how doesn't matter. But the reason why I'm doing this is because I said I was going to do it. And it's just instilled in who I am.
Where can everybody follow you on social media?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram at Blake the Builder. It's B-I-L-D-E-R, not U-I-L-D-E-R. So Blake the Builder. Facebook, feel free to add me. And Snapchat, it's just Blake Builder.
Daniel, there was my conversations with Darren Cruikshank and Blake Builder. Appreciate both those fighters giving me an opportunity to talk to them about what is going on with them. But we do want to get into this weekend's UFC fight card, UFC Fight Night 129 from Chile. Of course, going to be headlined by Damian Maia taking on Kamaru Usman. Of course, we all remember this is supposed to be Santiago Ponzinibbio versus Kamaru Usman, but Ponzinibbio suffers an injury, so he's out of this event. And, you know, look, when I think about this main event, and we remember how Colby Covington was able to control Damian Maia, I think this is going to be far times worse, and I'm expecting a dominating performance by Kamaru Usman.
Yeah, there's a big reason when you look at, by the way, when you look at best fight odds, and by the way, Supreme Court making gambling legal. I mean, I know it's not legal, but, like, eventually it's going to be legal. I don't know how it works, but
yeah, I'm glad anyways. I'm glad you brought that up. Okay, because I mean, obviously, that's a landmark case. Yeah. I'm telling you what, right now, if I could go place a legal bet here in Tampa on the UFC fight card this weekend, I ain't gonna lie, I'd probably be looking to make a bet on Kamaru Usman to win inside the distance.
What's that at? Because his normal odds are like 400.
Yeah, the distance? I haven't seen the props come out for that, but I mean, even if it let's just say it was minus 200 from the win in distance, I go make that bet. And look, I understand as a reporter, maybe you're not supposed to do that, but if I got a chance to make a little money on MMA, I'm probably gonna go do it.
Yeah, man. I mean, in a couple of years, you're gonna be able to go to your local 7-Eleven, get a Slurpee, and place a prop bet on Diego Rivas in a fight between him and Guido Canetti. I mean, that's exciting. But the odds, man, they are wide on the top two fights in this card. And it makes a lot of sense given that Maya's late replacement, given that like the fight against Colby Covington wasn't super great. And Kamaru Usman, I mean, what can you say about this guy other than he has completely changed the way I perceive him as a fighter? My initial thought from him coming out the Ultimate Fighter is – I could care less about an Usman fight. I know what he is. He's kind of a boring, lame, prey fighter. Man, this guy is a dynamite. I mean, I love watching him fight. He has progressed so quickly. He hits hard, high volume, high action, and I think this is going to be a highlight reel for Usman. The thing is, Damian Maia is a high-level jiu-jitsu player. I don't know if people know this, but that's what he's really good at. He has made a career out of that being his reputation, and when a guy's that good at one thing, there's always that chance that he catches Usman in a submission. There's a higher probability for an upset for Maia than maybe other fighters just because he is that damn good at submission. So keep that in mind, but the obvious expectation is that this is a major moment for Kamaru Usman, main eventing the show, potentially getting a big-time victory.
Yeah, and would really put him right there in terms of, you know, probably a fight away from potentially getting a title shot. Of course, we got the interim title next week with Colby Covington and Rafael Dos Anjos. You mentioned about the wide odds and the co-main event. Tatiana Suarez is, as of doing this podcast here on Tuesday evening, over a 4-1 favorite over Alexa Grasso. She is a 3-1 underdog. Look, Suarez is my pick in the fight, you know, and it's kind of, you know, in a way, you know, a little bit of an odd matchup for Alexa Grasso. But, I mean, they've thrown her, you know, they have not given her easy fights.
They haven't, and it's kind of interesting because, so, you know, Tatiana's my pick as well. But I will say Suarez and Grasso, to me, represent, if we're doing a draft of fighters in strawweight who have a great potential both inside the cage and as a fighter you could kind of promote as a star, they would be high up there in the women's strawweight division. I think both these fighters have long runs in the UFC ahead of them, and they are very promising. This is a great fight. But to me, Suarez is just a fighter. I think he's going to take it to Grasso, really control how this fight plays out, control the pace, but more importantly, control where this fight goes. And that's why I think she's going to keep the pressure on and get the victory. But Alexa Grasso, you look at her record, and since her days in Invicta, I mean, she has taken on some tough challengers, and she represents the toughest opponent Tatiana Suarez has had. But the UFC clearly has Suarez earmarked as a real potential star in the strawweight division, and I think it's going to be clear why when this fight happens. Although I wouldn't be surprised if Grasso makes this fight really interesting when it comes to just being entertaining, because the thing about her is she really is a gung-ho type fighter. When she's down, she'll kind of come out in that third or second frame and really be excellent. So one thing to keep in mind. Grasso did miss weight in her last fight against Ronda Marcos. It became a cash weight at 119, so if she misses weight again, that's just a troubling trend. So just keep that in mind as we look at the weigh-ins.
I will tell you, as I look at this fight card, there are three fighters on the main card that I'm very interested to see how they perform. Those fighters are Dom Reyes, who's going to be taking on Jared Cannonier, Andrea Lee making her UFC debut, and Vicente Luque is going to be the opening fight on the main card on FS1. But is it? I look at this fight card, top to bottom. I mean, look, you're interested to see, you know, can Kamaru Usman do what we think he's going to do? But in terms of the fight that I am probably the most interested to see play out is on the FS2 prelims in Moreno and Pantoja. I mean, I've got to imagine you're probably on the same wavelength as I am.
Yeah, this could headline a show. It really, I mean, it would be a very not great rating, but if I told you that Moreno Pantoja was the headliner for a UFC show, I think we wouldn't blink an eye, right?
I'd be like, what, are they doing a show in Mexico or a show in Brazil?
Yeah. It would, yeah, exactly. It wouldn't be a strong show, obviously. But it's not that lower of a fight when it comes to marketing than Maya Usman. I would assume that, I mean, why is this fight on FS2? Because everything else is already locked in place.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question has got to be is, you know, Diego Rivas is on the main card because he is from Chile. If there was going to be a fight I would take off the main card for Moreno and Pantoja, it would be the Rivas Canetta fight. But because of Rivas being from Chile.
Yeah. I understand the reason why, but it's just something where it's a bad look when you look at, excuse me, some of these fights, and it's like, you know, Moreno and Pantoja are two top 12 UFC flyweights and above and beyond entertaining. I mean, this is going to be a hell of a contest, and you could really make the case that it's – well, I will make the case. It's the most compelling fight on this entire card. It's the one I'm looking forward to the most, even more than the main event and the co-main event. And if you're an MMA fan, just keep in mind that this is on Fox Sports 2. It might not even go on last. I think Cummins Prezeris is going to go on last.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, DVR just in case you miss it. But Moreno Pantoja is a phenomenal damn fight, and I can't wait. My pick in that one is Brandon Moreno. And, yeah. And wait, isn't that a rematch of the Ultimate Fighter? I'm pretty sure it is.
I'm pretty sure you're correct, because Pantoja was the number one seed and Moreno was the number 16 seed, as I recall.
Yeah, and it was a fight where Brandon Moreno really impressed.
He lost by submission in the second round in that one.
Yeah, and I think it was a fight where he really challenged the one seed, and maybe with that fight, maybe what they saw in the gym, that's what got Brandon Moreno a UFC deal, because I think he even had his first UFC fight. It was either on the finale or right before the finale. Let me just double check. Yeah, I think it was right before the finale. He already had a fight against Luis Smoka where he went and got that win for the finale.
And Moreno, just a slight underdog right now in the betting odds, plus 110. Pantoja, minus 140. But, look, it's I'll be honest with you, I'm probably going to be DVR in this card. I don't think I'm going to be, watching it live. It really depends on, are the Tampa Bay Lightning playing on Saturday? As I record this podcast, game three's tonight. So hopefully they can get a win and get back in this series. But if they're playing Saturday, you can pretty much guarantee that's what I'll be doing. Or I'm pretty sure it's NBA basketball playoff game. I'll be watching that one. I was texting Daniel on Monday night. The fact of your Rockets, boy, they love to stand around.
Yeah, that was the general takeaway of everybody on the damn Inside the NBA show too.
But you know what? They were. I'm sitting here and I'll be the first one to say I do not watch. I have not watched much Rockets basketball, and I'm sitting there as someone who played basketball growing up, and I'm just like, holy cow. Like, it's 2-on-5 because the other, besides Chris Paul and James Harden, everyone else is like in the corners and it becomes 1-on-1 basketball. And I'm just like, wow. I'm like, if you're going to beat the Warriors, man, you better learn how to pass the ball.
Yeah, well, we're not going to beat the Warriors. I tell you that much. That game, I mean, look, it's not looking good for either of our favorite teams. As we look in the conference finals, I mean, y'all are down 0-2 and we were only down 0-1, but it was a home game, and you got to learn how to pass the ball, and you got to learn how to make sure Kevin Durant doesn't suit up, because he felt like a video game character where everything was on 99. I mean, he just made every shot. So
First off, what was your boy Chris Paul wearing?
Oh, yeah, the fashion icon. It was something I can't even – we and you can't pull that off.
Oh, no way, dude. Could you imagine if you walk like think about this. You walked into a bar or club wearing that?
I wouldn't be allowed, even if I was over 21. I would be turned away.
Yeah, that just – when I saw that outfit, I was like, holy cow. I was sitting on my couch going, oh. And look, and I'm jazzed up for that series. I mean, I think they're by far the two best teams. A lot of, I was joking with some buddies last night. I was just like, first to 130 points wins.
It's not very good defense. And the most infuriating part was how many open shots the Warriors got. How many open shots Kevin Durant had when he had space and was able to get it. So it's going to be high scoring. It's not going to be great defense. And, the Rockets don't have a single guy that can defend Kevin Durant. And that's so it's going to be. Next time we record a podcast, there's a good chance neither of our teams are in the playoffs anymore.
Yeah, that is a very good chance. Before we move on to some MMA news, I got this question. Of course, everyone knows how much Daniel loves chicken wings. I mean, he was probably hating me last Saturday when I put a little post on Instagram with some house-made chicken wings that my wife made. But this question comes from Chris McCann saying, "Been meaning to ask this important question for a month. How does Daniel feel about Boneless Thursday and BOGO Tuesday going away? This new $8 for $6 deal is crap. I can do the math. This is more per wing."
It's a tragedy. If I could go, I just graduated college. I still have to take summer classes. Don't tell anybody. I had to finish my degree. The best part is of my entire college career, Jason, keep in mind, I'm very poor, especially in college. Was going to eat at Buffalo Wild Wings and realizing it was like a Thursday and you could spend, 60 cents on a single wing, or a Tuesday and it's like less than 50 cents on a bone-in wing. It's like, it's literally like, I was prepared to eat 20 wings, but now I'm eating 40. So the fact that it's going away is absolute BS. I'm going to be honest with you, the prices at Buffalo Wild Wings, I'm going to go into serious debt. So I'm glad that they're out there. And as much as I love wings and I love going to Buffalo Wild Wings, Jason, I will say I'm just not that person that ever notices the deals of anything. It's just a pleasant surprise when I go in the restaurant, and I don't know why. I mean, I wasn't aware of the news, actually, and now I'm really sad. And the sad part is I'm going to buy just as many wings. It's just going to cost a little bit more. So maybe we can start a petition. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I don't know. You know, it's been a while since I've gone out for wings, but I got a couple more spots here in Tampa. In terms of MMA news, one thing I do want to mention before we get into the Yair Rodriguez topic, the Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports has put together a charity fund to benefit retired participants of combative sports. The ABC announced this recently. This is the Retired Fighter Charitable Fund, which was created to help retired fighters who have fallen on hard times due to mental or physical health issues related to injuries sustained while competing in combat sports. They are now seeking donations for this retirement fund, retired fund. 100% of the donations do go directly to aid retired fighters. This was a quote from Mike Mazzulli, the president of the ABC. Quote, this charity is an important step to give back to those who have given so much to the combative sports. We are looking forward to issuing gifts to those combatants who have given their all to the sport. And that was Mike Mazzulli. The press release goes on to say, support for the Retired Fighter Charitable Fund can be through cash donations, goods, services, or sponsorships of an event. The Association of Boxing Commissions is currently looking for corporate partners to help them to extend our reach as many athletes as possible. All interested parties can contact the Retired Fighters Fund via email at donate@abcboxing.com. Qualified athletes or their representatives can submit an application for a gift to help with medical and or living expenses during a challenging time. The charity never makes payments to the athlete directly, but to the debt or guardian on the athlete's behalf. The deadline for applications for an award is June 30th, 2018, with awards being announced at the annual ABC conference on July 30th, 2018. More information on how to apply for grants is available on the ABC website at abcboxing.com/fighter/fun. Once again, abcboxing.com/fighter/fun. And speaking of that annual ABC meeting, it's going to be in Orlando this year. And was talking to Mike Mazzulli on Tuesday, and Daniel, we're going to give you a week off during the end of July, as I'm going to be doing a special roundtable edition. Going to have Mike and two other executive directors on with me to talk the regulatory side. So I am. That should be an interesting show with what Andy Foster's doing with the weight cutting plan, you know, drug testing, and so many other things going on. And ma'am, I'm really looking forward to basically just having an hour long conversation with executive directors about the regulatory side.
Yeah, man, that's really interesting. I like the fund idea. I think a cool idea for them once they start doing some distributing maybe some money, some charity is. I think a way to raise that deal up is to maybe put together a nice video of them helping out a fighter in need. I think that type of video could really get a lot of traction on social media, and maybe that could really generate big time donations for the charity. But I think it'd be a good look for, you know, the UFC, et cetera, to get involved with funding this for that. And it's great. And I'm looking forward to that podcast, man. I look forward to you asking them hard hitting questions, Jason. I don't want to listen to this podcast and hear any softballs out of you, all right?
I don't think you have to worry about me throwing softball questions out there, but...
I don't know. You're a fan of the Tampa Bay Rays, and all they do is throw those softballs. I mean, they're bad at baseball, just like...
It's tough to be a Rays fan right now. It's really tough. It's tough.
We're in complete agreement. Because I'm a Rangers fan, it sucks. With that being said, it's not as painful as being a Chuck Liddell fan.
Oh man, I tell you. I mean, look, we should not be surprised he's coming out of retirement. I think all the signs have been out there. I think the question I have with Chuck is if it's not Tito, who does he fight?
Rico Rodriguez. Who do you think? Who would be the fight for Chuck Liddell?
There can't be many options. Randy Couture?
Vitor Belfort?
I guess. I mean, I look at it and...
Boris Griffin?
Since it looks like it's going to be Golden Boy, I just hope that this just isn't about a one-time cash grab.
Well, The thing is, there may not be an opportunity to do a two-time crash grab, because this will probably be something where there will be a one-time, the very first time they do a Chuck Liddell card, that there will be interest. After that, that interest could really die down. It could get really sad, and that may just be what it is. What I'm interested in, aside from this fight not happening, but it probably will, is the distribution of this fight. Will it be on pay-per-view? Will it be on iPay-per-view? Will it be on television? Will it be on HBO, Showtime, whatever? Because that, to me, will be telling. Because if it is on pay-per-view, I do not believe people will watch this fight. But if it is on television or cable or whatever, paid, you know, like HBO or Showtime, I believe people will watch this fight and it'll be a part of the conversation.
This thought just came to my head. ESPN Plus.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because I was watching the Lomachenko fight on Saturday. You know, I was watching Bellator and the UFC. When the Lomachenko fight came on, it went on the big TV. But they were talking about the Crawford Horn fight. That's a ESPN Plus fight.
Yeah, that's interesting. You think the UFC has the type of negotiating power to nix that?
Probably not. Right? Yeah, I mean, with that deal already done, I mean, but it's just something. I mean, look, I think, you know, no matter who Chuck fights, and if you are going to do the fight, the Tito fight, I think it is from a, you know, if you're looking to make the most money possible, that's a fight you go with. You know, I think one of the things you have to question about this whole story is, you know, they were trying to tease about this happening in Bellator. Clearly, Bellator is not interested, because I think if Bellator was interested in making this fight, it would have already been made.
Yeah, and that really tells you a lot that they don't want to do this. And let's just lay it out, man. Chuck Liddell is 48 years old. He's not going to fight John Jones. A fight with Tito Ortiz, you know, that seems kind of safe. But this is a guy who is 48 years old. And the last time we saw him fight, he got destroyed by Rich Franklin in a brutal knockout. Before that, he got destroyed by Shogun Hua. Before that, he got destroyed by Rashad Evans. That was 2008, 2009, 2010. This dude should not be competing in this sport, because it is really bad for his brain.
I've said it. Everything changed for Chuck Liddell when he lost the UFC title against Rampage Jackson. He was never the same guy.
Yeah, I mean, he had one great fight, or not just a great fight, like one of the best fights ever with Vanderlei Silva. But it was like that Rampage fight represented a changing of the guard when it comes to the light heavyweight division. There was just a big time advancement with all those top light heavyweights in Rampage, Rashad, Shogun, Lyoto, eventually John Jones. You know, Forrest Griffin was in there too. And it's just a lot of the quotes coming out of Liddell come across as delusional, which is a scary place to be as a 48-year-old professional fighter.
I mean, I want to say to myself that I won't tune in, but I'm sure if there's nothing else going on, I'll probably tune in.
Yep, and we'll talk about it.
Oh, of course we're going to talk about it. Now, something we got to talk about. It was last week after we did the show, and I'm still amazed by this. The Yair Rodriguez situation. And, you know, Yair has not talked yet, and it would be interesting to hear his side of the story, because first off, I think anyone knows this. Don't automatically assume what Dana White is telling you is the truth. But I almost look at this, if you look at the timetable of this whole situation, to me it's almost like the UFC was trying to bully Yair Rodriguez into taking this fight. You know, against Zabit. Now, first off, from Yair's aspect, does a fight against Zabit make sense from him from a rankings aspect? No, it doesn't. Now, maybe, you know, if they were throwing him a bunch of money to take this fight, okay. Now, why he didn't take the Ricardo Lamas fight? Only he knows the answer. We can't wait. We have to hear a sign. But if I tweeted this, if I'm Scott Coker and Rich Chow, once I got confirmation of that release letter, I am getting Yair Rodriguez to a contract as quickly as possible. This kid's 25 years old. If you wanted to go into the Mexico region, with your Bellator product, you now have the guy to go there. It feels like the John Fitch situation with the UFC back, 2006, 2007, whatever year that was. It's just, you know, it seems the UFC and Dana White making an emotional decision based on a fighter, for whatever reason, not accepting a fight.
Yeah, and this really, look, there may be some unknowns here from both ends, just because it's really perplexing to release a fighter with as much potential and is as exciting in a guy who's a Mexican, because that's a big deal when it comes to penetrating that market, as Yair Rodriguez. So it's got to be more than just saying no to two different fights. I mean, that is being difficult, but that's not egregious enough to justify letting him go. Maybe that's all it is. And if it is, bonehead mistake by the UFC, because they just hand wrapped Rodriguez to Bellator. You got to think, if Rodriguez goes to Bellator coming off of this dismissal, he's going to be more open to basically any matchup they send. And, you know, he may just find himself in a featherweight tournament. I think if Bellator likes the way they do this heavyweight tournament, you can look at this featherweight division and maybe do the exact same thing, an 8-man tournament. And Yair Rodriguez would work real well right in that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just, I'm still baffled that the UFC went ahead and did this. Well, you know, look, I really would like to hear Yair Rodriguez's side of the story, but clearly, if you're Bellator, you got to make that happen. Another story, this is, you want to talk about wild and just insane stories. So UFC fighters have, once they pass 25 drug tests, will they now get a USADA t-shirt? I can't even say this with a straight face.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard ever. USADA, it says train clean, fight clean. It's like, it's insane to see Vitor Belfort with a shirt like that or whatever. It's just, it's so weird. It's so USADA. And at the end of the day, when you look at some of these situations, it's absurd. But it's like, man, USADA really needs to refocus on their public relations strategies.
And I tweeted this. So what shirt does Josh Barnett get? Sorry for screwing up your career for the last 18 months?
Uh-huh. That is damn right, man. In light of that, in light of some of these other deals, it's just USADA has made some major mistakes, and it's like, it seems kind of tone deaf to just give out shirts. I mean, those shirts cost money, and there are fighters with the weird history. I mean, shouldn't everyone have a t-shirt at some point in time, right? Like, people should get tested 25 times. What happens when people get tested 50 times? Who's been tested the least? You know, that's these
so
are the
if,
questions.
If you
I
get a t-shirt at 25 times, what happens at 50 times?
I think you get...
Do you get a coffee mug?
Yeah. And at some point, you're going to have to give every single fighter one. That's expensive.
Oh, we talked about at the beginning of this show. So many weird things. This is right up there in terms of weird stories.
Yeah, this was like somebody pitched this idea, and at some point in time, somebody should have said, no, this is stupid, and no one did.
Like, who is the fighter that's going to wear this shirt?
Who's the fighter that's going to sell it on eBay?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Oh, can I buy it? Can I buy it right now? Is somebody have it? I mean, I would buy it to wear it ironically.
Hell, if you're a fighter, just sign it, put it up on eBay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right now I Google USADA drug shirt and can't find it yet, but yeah.
Oh, it's going to be there eventually.
Yeah.
It's going to be there eventually. So that is going to do it for this week's MMA Report podcast. You got any big plans this week?
Man, I definitely do not. Just going to tune into UFC Fight Night. I hope next time we talk, the Rockets are still in the playoffs. I'm doubtful, but you know, I'm all focused about the Western Conference Finals as a sports fan. I'm really excited to see my team in the pseudo NBA Finals, and I wish your Tampa Bay Lightning some luck. You got any big plans?
Got a buddy's birthday party on Friday, and then with the lighting your playlist tower. Me and the fellas are getting together, but no, not too much out of that. Let everyone know next week's podcast is actually going to come out on Tuesday, as I got something going on Tuesday. So Daniel and I will be recording that on Monday of next week. So if you do got any questions or comments for us, be sure to hit us up. Either one of us on social media. Of course, I'm at Jason_Floyd. Daniel is at Daniel Galvan DGG. Of course, if you follow me on Instagram, you'll probably see food pictures that Daniel seems to hate because he realizes my food. I have a much different food variety than he does.
Yep, all I got is Chick-fil-A and Chipotle and Buffalo Wild Wings, which those three are glorious. But I love hate to see all the delicious food that you intake.
God, I always want Chick-fil-A on Sunday.
It would be the greatest thing ever. I just order it and keep it in the refrigerator and eat it on Sunday.
Here, I want them to start selling bottles of Chick-fil-A sauce.
I know, man. That would be genius.
Oh, I'd buy five bottles. I'd have them in store ready to go.
I'm pretty sure you can just Google it. You can Google the ingredients and find it.
I will tell you, the Chick-fil-A by me, they are very generous when you ask for Chick-fil-A sauce.
Just give you like seven different containers.
Oh yeah, man, it's great.
Oh, that's there's nothing worse than a stingy person, you know, when it comes to giving you some salsa.
It's like if they only give you one, I'm like, you bastard.
We're talking three for some fries and two for my sandwich or my nuggets, you know.
And you always like want to have one left over for something else you want to dip later on in the day.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's a pro move to just store some you never know when you need it. I've never thought about that, but yeah, it seems really hard. I'm looking at the ingredients now, and there's like a trillion ingredients. You gotta get honey, some mustard, mayonnaise, barbecue sauce, and lemon juice, basically.
Huh. Yeah. Well, I'll probably hit some off the Chick-fil-A for lunch tomorrow. Now that I'm getting hungry. So, but that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, you hear typically every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com. As I mentioned, it'll come out on Tuesday of next week. So appreciate everyone listening in, and we'll be back next week to talk about everything going on in the world of mixed martial arts.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer, Quick Fix, on Radio Influence.
Longtime wrestling veteran and WWE Hall of Famer, and my pleasure to welcome Coco Beware.
Now, you know good well that I'm not going to let a promoter name me Coco. Come on now. My mother and daddy didn't name me that. He's definitely not going to be a promoter name me Coco. Now, that came back in my... Back in the early days of my life in football, high school football.
Ah, gotcha.
I was the only black on the football team, and I stood out like a sore thumb. And so, and the guys started kind of gave me a little nickname there, Coco, you know, and they were spelling it C-O-C-O-A or whatever. Yeah. I didn't like the COCO and stuff like that because it was just more like a drink. So I finally got something where nobody is using that KOKO but me.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.